Good morning. Thank you. I had a couple of people say good morning. Guten Morgen. I have a little German and that's it. All right. We're going to talk about Angular forms and validation this morning. My name's Deborah Carrata. I'm a software developer. Is it really loud or is it just echoey and that's why it sounds weird to me? It's okay? All right. I'm also on the Angular doc team, so you can find the Angular docs at Angular.io. If you're interested, the Angular team puts out a lot of its information regarding what's going on with Angular. You'll hear about TypeScript. All of that kind of stuff is on Twitter. So if you really want to keep up with what's going on, you might want to join Twitter if you're not already a tweeter. And you can follow me at Deborah Carrata. I usually retweet anything coming from the Angular team, any major doc updates or TypeScript updates, tools that are coming out, whatever. So feel free to follow me. It's at Deborah Carrata. So I thought I'd start by asking where you guys are in terms of forms. So how many of you have tried Angular forms? Quite a few. Great. Okay. How many of you are new to Angular forms but had Angular JS forms experience? A couple people. Okay. How many are new to Angular completely? Oh, a lot. Okay. Cool. Alrighty, the source code that I'm going to be showing today, you can find here. I've got two different versions of it. The first version just uses a JSON file, so it's very easy to set up and get started and look at. The second one, it uses an actual in-memory web API, so it has the full save and update kind of capabilities, but then the code is more complicated. So if you want to start with something easier or if you want to dive right in, to the code we're looking at. I'm going to be mostly in the second one for our demos today. All right, so we're going to jump right into a demo of our sample application. All right, so if you were in my session yesterday, this one might look a little bit familiar. This is a movie hunter version of the product feature that we looked at yesterday. So this is a movie hunter. You're going to hunt down some movies. It's supposed to be humorous. You get the movie list. So again, this is somewhat similar to the product list. You can do filtering and so on. But the part we're interested in, of course, since we're doing forms, is the editing feature. And this has a simpler editing feature. So the example we looked at yesterday had a tabbed UI and everything. This one's simpler, so we have more time to go through the code. You can see it has validation. Please enter a movie title. Please enter a director's name. Please enter a number between 1 and 5, and so on. And notice that my save button is disabled now because it's invalid. So if I come back, I'm going to cancel that and edit again. If I make a change that is valid, my save button is enabled here. I can also delete. It'll ask me, really delete? Because, of course, you have to always ask. And so now it's gone off of our list. So that's our basic little sample app. There's also an add functionality, so I can add a new movie. The Sands of Time. Does that sound like a good title? Deborah Carrata, 5 stars. All right, so then I can save that, and it's here. Now, notice when I brought up the add movie that even though these are required fields, it didn't immediately show an error message. So it's not until I click in and click out that I'm getting the message. So that way the user's not immediately faced with a whole slew of errors as soon as they come onto the page. Okay, so that's our little starting demo. We are going to be looking at all of this code over the course of this hour. So let's go back here for a couple of minutes. When you're building forms, there are basically some key goals that you have in mind. First of all, you want to set default values. And that's true in the majority of cases, unless you're importing a user profile for the first time or something. But if you're doing any kind of updating, you're going to want to set the default values, right? You want them to see the current data and then edit it. You also, of course, want to retain the user's changes, because if you're not going to save what they've typed in, what's the point? So those two were pretty obvious. You might also want to track the form state. And by form state, I mean things like, is it dirty? Is it valid? And all of those kinds of things. And you want to track that so you can do things like disable that save button if the form isn't valid. You also, though, want to track the state for each individual element. So you can do things like display a validation error message if there's a problem with it. You also, of course, want to define the validation rules so that you can tell them it's valid or not, and you want to display appropriate messages. So all of these seem somewhat obvious. The hard part is actually ensuring all of these are taken care of in our code. So we're going to do that throughout the course here of this session. So when you're building Angular forms, you actually have two choices. You can build them template-driven, or you can build them using a reactive forms approach. Now, for those who've said that they've done Angular forms, how many of you have done template-driven? Okay, how about reactive? Oh, very, very few. A couple over here and a couple in the back. Okay. We're going to cover both. We're going to start with template-driven and go through some of that this first part, and then we're going to look at reactive second. So for template-driven, what is template-driven for those of you who haven't done Angular forms? It's basically an easy-to-use way to build forms. It's very similar to how AngularJS did forms, so you'll notice the similarities if you've done AngularJS. That's Angular version 1. The whole idea of template-driven forms is that it implements, it uses and leverages two-way data binding. So that way you're easily taking care of those first two criteria. If you're doing two-way binding, you're easily getting default values onto the form, and you're easily getting those values that the user's typing in off the form because you're using two-way binding. The other thing nice about template-driven is that it automatically tracks form and input element state. Okay, so that's taking care of our next two criteria, tracking form state and tracking element state. And Angular does that automatically for us behind the scenes. With reactive, it is more difficult. There's more code that you have to write, but then it's also more flexible, and it covers more complex scenarios. If your team is into the whole concept of immutable data models, that is basically a data model that isn't changed, then you don't really usually want to use two-way binding, because that sort of defeats the whole point of an immutable data model. So if you are the kind of shop that is really into that, you probably want to use reactive forms, because you're not going to want the two-way binding. You don't want exactly what the user to types in to show up in your data model. Reactive, too, it can be sometimes easier to perform an action on a value changed, because that's the whole idea of the reactive. It's very reactive to what the user is doing, and so it's really easy to do something as a value is being changed. So those are some of the benefits of reactive forms. You can also easily add input elements dynamically. So if you have a field on there, like an email address, and you want the user to be able to say, add another, and another email address field shows up, and they can say, okay, my work email is this, and then add another, and my home email is that. You can do that quite easily with reactive. It's a little bit more challenging with template-driven. Okay, so again, we're going to start with template-driven. If you're new to Angular, when you're building Angular applications, you're building components. Components are comprised of a template, which is your HTML, it's your view. Some code, which is built in the form of a class with properties and methods. That's your view model, if you're familiar with MVVM. And that's usually written in TypeScript. And then Angular requests some metadata that gives it some information about your component. So every component you write has a template, a class, and the metadata. As you might guess, for template-driven forms, the whole definition and everything that we're going to do with the form is going to be in the template, hence the name template-driven. All right, so we have our input elements will be in the form. Our data binding, of course, is in the form, or in the template. Our validation rules will be in the template. Any error messages that we want to display are going to be in the template. So our template becomes our kind of source of truth about our validation and our form requirements. Okay. All right, so how do we define a template-driven form? Well, we use the standard form tag of HTML fame. The only thing that is Angular-y about it is that we use ng-submit instead of submit, and that will ensure that it ties well into the exception handling and that kind of thing of Angular. And we just call a method, for example, and that's pretty straightforward. The thing, though, that happens when we do this is all happening behind the scenes. And you can actually do template-driven pretty much without knowing this part, but I think it's really helpful to know what's happening under the covers, so to speak, so that we can better understand how it's working and how it's happening. We want to peek and see how it's working behind the scenes? Yes, yelled the crowd. Okay, so what happens behind the scenes is Angular is creating an ng form model. So it's creating a whole set of data structures that's of type ng form, and you can see that it has some specific elements associated with it, including the form itself, which is defined to be of type form control. So what Angular is doing is it's tracking that information for us behind the scenes, and that's how it is tracking the form state and the element state. Okay, it's got this data structure that it's keeping track of for us. All right. So how do we define a control on the form? Well, we put a label on. That's just your everyday kind of label. We have an input element of some kind with standard input element-y kind of stuff, like your ID, type, placeholder, of course, is optional. But then here is where we're defining our validation rules. So we've got our standard required min length, max length. There's also a pattern, so you can do standard regex, regular expression types of validation. The part that's more Angular is this bottom part. If you've done any Angular, you recognize the banana in a box there, which is our ng model, which defines our two-way binding. So that is, again, meeting our first criteria, getting a default value into that element. And it's also meeting that second criteria of retaining then whatever the user is typing in. Now, the name attribute is a standard HTML attribute, but I put it in red as part of the Angular-y stuff because Angular requires it. In order for this input element to be appropriately tracked by its internal data structures, it has to have a name attribute. And the name we give to that attribute is the name that it uses to keep track of that control. That last thing, that hash thing, is called a template reference variable. And what that does is it gives us access to this input element in our template. So it's a variable referencing this particular input element. And we'll see where we're going to use that in just a few minutes. Okay, so I keep saying that Angular automatically keeps track of the control state. Let's dive into that a little bit more. It keeps track of validity, like whether it's valid. If it's invalid, it has an errors collection. That errors collection retains the name of the validation rule that's broken. So if it's a required field and that's what's in error, it's going to have the word required as one of the elements in the errors array. It also has whether it's been visited, which is touched or untouched. And what that means basically is that the user has entered and left the field. Okay, if they're just in the field, it won't be marked as touched. They have to enter it and leave it, either through the mouse or through the tab, or actually physically touching it on a touch device. Then there's value change, so there's dirty and pristine. So if the user changes something, even if they haven't left the field, it's immediately marked as dirty. If it hasn't been changed, even if they've gone in it and gone out of it, it still remains pristine. Okay, so this is another picture, an expanded picture of our form model. Again, you notice the NG form up at the top. It's going to retain our child control information. So you see this little controls collection up here. Inside that controls collection is the name, using the name attribute for each one of our input elements on the form. So if you put an input element on the form, give it a name, Angular automatically adds it to the NG Forms controls collection. If we drilled down into there, we will see that it also keeps track of the state of each of those. It also retains the form state. So here's our dirty, here's our errors collection, pristine, submitted, touched, untouched, and valid. Again, it's keeping track of all of this behind the scenes in memory for us. We don't really need to even know that this is here. The last thing it has is a value property, and the value property gives us the current value of every one of the input elements on the form. So we could ask for ngform.value, and it would give us back all of that data. We very rarely need to do that, however, because of our two-way binding. Our properties of our object will already have all of the current values of what the user typed in. But it's there. Okay, so moving on to validation. As you saw in the demo, the way that I'm doing validation is I'm turning the label red, turning the input box red, displaying an error message, and turning it red. Now, you don't have to do it that way. There's a lot of different ways to do it. In the Angular docs, we simply add a little column of red inside the input element. It looks kind of snazzy. So if you know, definitely can do it differently. But the technique for how to hook it up is somewhat similar. So the first thing that we want to do is add whatever styling we want. In my case, I'm using the ng class directive to add a validation class on. I'm using the Bootstrap set of style classes. You guys all heard of that? Almost most web developers. Who's heard of Bootstrap? Pretty much everybody? Yeah. So I'm just using the Bootstrap's hasError class, validation class, style class, sorry. And what I'm doing is I'm setting it equal to an expression. So what this is doing is if the expression is true, it's going to add the hasError style class onto whatever elements are inside this div. Okay. Where did that title var come from? Template reference variable. I heard someone here say it. That's our template reference variable. So if you remember that thing down there in our input element, so that's how we're referring to this particular input element. And we're saying if the user has touched it and it's not valid, then we're going to turn on the red. Okay, now I added the touched part because I don't want when the user first adds a new item to see a completely all red form because that can be kind of intimidating. So by saying that they have to have touched it before it shows red, then it won't come up right away with error messages. Is that making sense? Alrighty, so then displaying error messages, we're going to use Angular's ngif. So if it's been touched and there's something in the errors collection, then if that error is required, we're going to display one message. If it's min length, we'll display a different message, max length, a different message. So again, we're using that title var template reference variable. And of course, these aren't really recommended error messages. I made them really short so that they fit on my slide. Okay. All right, so what about the component? What goes in the component? Well, because everything is basically in the template, the only thing that really needs to go in the component is the actual data. So here I'm using, I'm defining a movie, and I'm using an interface, an iMovie interface that defines what the data elements are on the movie, and then I'm binding to those data elements. So the only code that I really need in my template, or I'm sorry, in my component is that movie property, and then I need the code to actually pull that from wherever that data is stored, a back-end server somewhere, and also to save it back. Okay? All right. So before we dive into the demo of that, does anyone have any questions about template-driven forms? Anybody? Okay. We're going to dive into a demo then. All right, so the first thing that we're going to look at is the HTML. App, movies, movie edit, HTML. Okay, is that code big enough or do you need it bigger? How are we doing back there? You're okay? All right, great. So this is our HTML. So here is our form right here, form. And this is the whole form element. Now notice I have this. This is something I didn't have on the slide. It's got this same hash on it. What would you guess that that thing was? Hash edit form. Think it might be another template reference variable? So what that's doing is that's letting me access that ng form data structure that's in the background, that's kind of hidden back there. So what I'm doing is I'm taking that and passing it into my save movie. Okay, the reason I'm doing that is because then my save movie method can find out whether the form really is valid or whether it's really been modified. Because if the user goes in and looks at it and hits the save but doesn't modify anything, we really don't need to go to the server and save it. So by passing it in, I can look at its state because it's keeping all those state properties for me. We'll look at the save method in just a few minutes. All right, so if you notice, starting here on line 12 is the start of my definition of my input element, and it goes all the way down to line 40. Yeah, not so nice. That's one of the real benefits of reactive forms is that you don't have all of this in your HTML. So we'll see a dramatic reduction when we get to the reactive forms. Okay, so what this first thing is doing, slide it over just a little bit. What this first thing is doing is, like I talked about on the slides, it's setting this hasError style class on if this is true. And in the real one, I'm actually checking touched or dirty and not valid. So you can decide in your shop when you actually want to show the message, just when it's been touched, when it's just when it's been dirty, touched or dirty, and so on. And then there's my input element. Here is my form control, my validation, my two-way binding, my name, and then my template reference variable. And then here I'm again repeating this check. So I've got all this code that I'm repeating in quite a few places. And then I'm displaying better error messages. Then the next input element, again, really long. The next input element, pretty long, and so on. So it does require quite a bit of HTML. So taking a quick look at the component, we can see that here is where we're identifying our movie. I can go to definition on iMovie, and here is my interface. So these are the elements associated with my movie. And these are the things then that I'm binding to. I'm binding to a title and description, so on. Okay. After seeing that, are there any questions? Anyone think of a question that they have? I know it's awfully early in the morning for a question. Okay. All right. So, next we're going to just summarize template-driven forms. So they're similar to AngularJS. They use ng-model for data binding, name for tracking the control. If you don't give it a name, I think it actually generates an error when you try to run it, saying that, hey, you need a name. And it uses template reference variables for referencing the controls in the template for displaying the error messages and such. Our validation and our messages themselves are all in the HTML. All right, so next let's talk about CRUD. We all know what that is, right? Create, read, update, and delete, because you can't do forms without retrieving and saving data, right? So we're going to talk for a few moments about CRUD operations with Angular. All right, so the way that Angular works is you build your components to support your views, and you build services to do any cross-cutting concerns. So for my movie information, I'm going to have a movie data service, and it is going to provide all of my CRUD operations. How does it do that? Well, Angular provides an HTTP service. So my service calls Angular service, who then in turn actually talks to our web server, wherever that is. So we would, for example, send a GET request to the HTTP service, who turns around and issues a GET request on our behalf to our web server. At some future point in time, the web server returns a response to that HTTP service, who turns around and passes that response back on to us, to our movie data service. Okay. All right. So this is what the code looks like. How many were in the observable session yesterday? Quite a few? Okay. For those of you that aren't, you frequently use observables in order to retrieve data. Because data retrieval is an asynchronous operation. Anytime that you're working with asynchronous operations in Angular, you can use an observable. And of course, anytime we're talking to a web server, that's async, so we can use an observable. One really, for those of you who aren't familiar with observables, observables are basically just streams of data or streams of events that are occurring over time. So think of users typing characters. You're going to get some stream of characters coming in over time. Or think about mouse movements. You're going to get those mouse movements all over time that they're going to come in, and you're going to receive them. The thing about doing data operations, so anytime that you're doing any kind of CRUD operations with observables, is when you get a response, you're always only getting one. So you're getting a stream of data, but that stream is one. You're getting a stream of one. So kind of little short way to say it is one and done. So observables, when they're working with talking with HTTP, they're one and done. So they're not waiting to get more data or anything like that. You also do not need to cancel or terminate any of your observables when you use them with HTTP. Angular does that automatically because it is one and done. So you don't have to close those out. All right, so here is our observable. We're importing observable from reactive extensions. Then we're importing any operators we're using. In this little example, I'm only using the map operator. Then here we are pulling in Angular's HTTP service, and we're leveraging Angular's dependency injection. So the way Angular supports dependency injection is it's all constructor-based. My brain is slowly waking up this morning. So it's constructor-based. So you pass the instance in that you want, and that does your dependency injection for you. So then you have access to HTTP. Then you would write code something like this. So this is our movie service. So this is the service code that we're looking at. We're calling this.http, and we're getting the HTTP from that constructor variable there. And we're calling the get operation, and what we're calling here is Angular's HTTP service. We're passing it the URL, and then what we're doing is we're mapping the response. Now, one of the things about observables, if you're somewhat new to them, is they have literally zillions. Is that a number? Zillions of operators. So if you go look up observables on the interwebs, you will find that there are literally hundreds of operators that observables have. One of the common ones you'll use in Angular is the map operator, and what it basically does is maps one format to another. So we are mapping the incoming response, because we know we're getting a response from a HTTP. We're mapping that into a JSON object, and then we're casting that into a movie. So that's what that iMovie syntax is doing there. So what that does is immediately gives us back the data as a nice set of movies that we can then bind to. Okay, when we call the data access service, so now we're looking at our component code. So this is in the component when we want to get the data to display our form. This is what that code would look like. So we're, our service is also going to be injected in on the constructor using dependency injection, so we get that movie service instance. We call that getMovie method that we were just looking at, and we have to subscribe. To start up an observable, you always subscribe to that observable, and that's what loads it and what starts it and what makes it actually go do its thing. I used to use the example, it's very similar to subscribing to a newspaper, but does anyone subscribe to a newspaper anymore? I don't know. Okay, so in the subscribe, what we're passing are two functions, one to execute on success and one to execute if there's an error. So on success, we will get the movie, and what we're doing is we're passing it to a method called onMovieRetrieved, and we'll look at that method in a minute. If we get an error, we're setting our error message property to that error so that we can display it. Now, we probably don't really want to do that in a real app. We'd want to look at what the error is and decide whether we want to maybe log it and display something friendlier to the user or something like that. All right, what about a put request? Again, we're setting up HTTP. We are calling Angular's HTTP service put method. Here we're passing it a little bit of extra stuff. We're passing the URL and the data that's been updated along with our header and other options. Then again, we're mapping the result, but we aren't really getting a result back from the put request, so we are just simply returning our movie that we originally had gotten. Calling the data access service, again, we subscribe, and then we can again define a function to call when the update worked correctly, which I'm calling on save complete, or whether it was called with an error, returned with an error. Okay, so are there any questions before we get to the demo of our service? Are there any questions? Okay. All right, so let's jump into our service. So here is our movie service. So I'm using in my service here a lot more operators than I showed in the slides. So I'm using map and do and catch, and I'm also using of and throw. So I'm using several more here. Here is the get movies. This is the plural version, and this one is used by the list page to display all of the list of movies. So here I'm calling the get, passing the URL. I'm mapping the response, and here I'm casting it to an array of movies, so it will actually put them back in a nice array for me that I can bind to. The do operator on a observable is a very handy kind of debug sort of thing. The do lets you do a little debugging and doesn't actually have any impact on the data. So frequently you would do that to log out something, like here I'm logging the data. So this is for debugging purposes. And then I can call a catch on there to catch any errors. Here is my get movie, and here I am passing in the ID of the movie I want to get. Here I have a little extra code that's looking for an ID of zero. I have defined in my particular app that an ID of zero means I'm doing an add operation. So when it first creates, if I do an add, when it first creates it, it gives an ID of zero until it goes to the database and assigns it a real ID. So here, if it is an ID of zero, it doesn't go out and try to find it, and instead it returns an observable of an initialized movie, because the calling code is expecting to get back an observable. So I'm converting my initialized movie into an observable using observable of. And then this code is very similar to what we saw on the slide. I'm mapping the data. Sometimes, depending upon your server, the data actually comes in a data property of the body and not the body itself. So this extra code is doing that. It's taking the data property of that. So depending upon your web API service or your PHP service or whatever your service is, you might be getting the data in a data property and not just directly. And then again, I've got to do in a catch. Here's the delete. It's just simply passing a URL and some options. The save has a check again for a zero. If it's a create, then it's going to do the post. If it's an update, it's going to do the put, which is down here further right here. So that's what our service is, and then the service can be reused by any component that needs to get or save data. So it's used by the movie list, the movie detail, and the movie edit. So let's check one of those and see how we actually call this thing. So here's my edit component. And we looked before at our movie here. So here is where we are injecting in the movie service. I'm also injecting in the router and the activated route. And the reason that I need this is right here, when I go to the edit page, I need to pass to the edit page which movie I'm editing. So the URL will look something like /movies/5. And I need to pull off that 5 to know that I need to go get the movie with an ID of 5. So what this code is doing is it's using an observable because it's watching the parameters to see if the parameters are going to change. And every time I get a new parameter, ID parameter, it's going to go get that one. So my get is right here. I subscribe, calling get movie, and then I call on movie retrieved, which here is the key line here. What this is doing is it's taking the movie I just retrieved, assigning it to my local movie variable. As soon as I do that, my two-way binding kicks in and my form shows up with all the data. This other little bit here is just setting the correct title to be either add or edit. Okay, for a delete, it has a little extra code here and then calls the delete. Here's my really delete confirmation dialog. On save complete, it routes back to the movies page. Whoops, here's my save then. Here's where I'm using that edit form. Remember when we looked at the form, we were passing in the NG form. And so here's where I'm using it. I'm checking to see if it's really dirty and valid. And if so, I subscribe and then call on save complete. Are there any questions about that before we move in? I'll move on. Yeah.
Just a little one. In your error handling, the error parameter comes in as an error, as an any, and you cast it again to an any. Why do you do that?
So the question had to do with my error handling. The fact that I'm defining it as any here and then casting it again as any there. I probably didn't need to do that. Is this going to still be defined as any? Yeah, I probably didn't need to do that. But I'm going to leave it there just because I don't want to have to check it in. So yes, I probably didn't need to recast since that was how I was defining it coming in. Any other questions or see anything else that looked odd? Yeah.
If the form is not dirty, you will show the error message.
Yeah. See that, you guys are really awake this morning. See, I have given this talk numerous times and no one's ever pointed that out. But yes, that's true. This is not production quality code. This is your junior developer's code, and during your code review, you would point that out, that my if condition is not totally valid. If you're not seeing what he's pointing out here, I have an if dirty and valid, then it's good. Else, please correct the validation error. So if they haven't changed anything, they're going to get this error message showing up. And I didn't fix it because I didn't want the code to be more complicated, but I probably should to ensure that this isn't confusing. But do you see what he was saying? My else case is lame. Any other questions? Or you guys are really awake this morning. Okay. So, moving back onto the slides, we're going to build a custom validator. So, custom validation. As I mentioned, it has the standard HTML validators, and you can do a lot with that pattern, right? If you've got some regex skills or Googling skills, you can get pretty far with the pattern. But sometimes you need to do more custom validation. Maybe you need to perform some business kind of rule checking. Or the other common one is cross-field validation. If this field contains this value, then this one can't contain this value. Or something as simple as a re-enter your password. You know, enter your password, confirm your password. You need to cross-field validate that those two are the same. So that's another example of that. But there are numerous cases where you want to perform your own validation. You can build a custom validator that is synchronous, meaning that it's immediately executed, or one that's asynchronous. An example of an asynchronous validator would be something like having the user put in a unique username and then having to go to the server and ensure that username isn't already in use. So that would be an example of that. We're going to create a synchronous validator. So building a custom validator with template-driven forms is a two-step process. If you're using reactive forms, you only have to do the first step. So the first step is to actually build the validator. That's the one that's going to have your logic for doing your validation. The second step then, that you only have to do if you're going to use this validator from a template-driven form, is to wrap that in a directive. Why do we need to do that? Because with template-driven forms, we have to have the attributes. That's how we do the validation with template-driven forms. So in order to have an attribute, you've got to have an attribute directive around your validator. If you're doing reactive forms, which we'll be talking about in a few minutes, then you can build just the validator and call it directly. So in my example, what I did is a numeric range validator. And I know you can do a range with a pattern, but that was what I selected to do. So here I've got my MH range 1, 5. So that's saying it has to be a number between 1 and 5. And that's then my directive, MH range. MH for movie hunter. All right, so let's take a quick look at that. All right, so I have it under my shared folder, number validator. So the standard way that you create a validator is that first example above. What I'm doing there is what you have to do to write a validator is write a function. That function takes one and only one parameter, which is the control being validated. It returns a key value pair where the key is a string and the value is a Boolean, or it returns a null. The function will return a null if it's valid. If it's invalid, it returns the name of the validation rule, so range in this case, and true. The problem with this is that it only allows you to pass in one parameter, which is the control. So if you want to have like validating between 1 and 5, I had to hard code that in. If you want to have parameters, you have to wrap the function in another function. So here I've wrapped that same function. Let's get that back on here. In another function where the outer function is where I'm passing in the values. So I've got range and my min and my max, and I'm returning a validator function. And then that code above is down here, only I'm using then my variables instead of the hard-coded 1 and 5. Okay. So that's how you do a valid. So you can use the top version if you don't need variables or parameters on your validator, and then the bottom one if you do. Okay. So then the second step, I'm just going to click to the next one here. The second step is to change it into a directive. And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about directives, but here we had to wrap this in the range validator directive. So here I'm specifying all of the code for a directive, and here is my validate. I'm implementing a validator, and then this returns the validator function, which I've defined up here, number validator range min max. Okay, again, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on directives in this session. But you have to create one in order to get the validators to work with template-driven forms. All right, well, it is time to move on to reactive forms. Whoops. So as we saw, template-driven is easy to use, similar to AngularJS and so on. What we're going to do now is move on to reactive forms. So here's the same picture that we looked at before, and recall that our template-driven forms, of course, were all in our template. For our reactive forms, a large portion of our code and our effort is going to be in the class itself. We're going to create a form group. Now remember that Angular had done that for us. It had created that ng form data structure and created a form with that form group. Now we have to create that data structure, that whole thing, ourselves. Okay, we need to create the form controls. We need to set the default values. We need to write our own or add the validation. We need to write the error messages all in the class instead of in the template. Now, as a developer, I frequently would rather have all of that logic in my code than in my HTML. But that is frequently a team preference, whichever one that you prefer. All right, you still have to have some stuff in your template. You still have to actually have the input elements. So Angular is not set up to actually build your input elements from what code you have in your class. You still have to add your input tags, and then you use control binding to bind those input elements that are in your template into the input elements you've defined with form controls in your class. And we'll see what that looks like here. Okay, so here again is our form model, but now we have to create these ourselves. So we're going to create our form group, and we're going to add our form controls into our controls collection. So here is our component code. We're going to define our form using some kind of variable name, a property. So I've called mine edit form, so my property is edit form. It's defined as a form group. And then I create it saying new form group. So I'm actually using your basic TypeScript new command in order to create a new instance of a form group. I am then passing it an object with properties, one for each of my controls or each of my input elements. And for each one, I'm creating new form control. Okay, so I am myself building out that data structure. I'm passing to the new form control the default value that I want to display. That's that first parameter. The second parameter are any synchronous validators that I want to define. So in this case, I just have required on there. And then there's an optional third parameter to define any async validators I want. Okay, if I want multiple validators, like multiple synchronous validators, I pass an array instead of passing a single one. So I'm doing this all myself. Now, to make this code a little bit easier, Angular provides something called the Form Builder. And with the Form Builder, you can simplify that syntax. So I'm still creating it myself, but you notice that I'm not newing up anything. So it's kind of the Form Builder lets me use a shorthand syntax to create my form group and my form controls. Okay, so this is doing the exact same thing. It's just doing it with a shorthand syntax. So I'm defining my FB as my form builder. I'm calling the group and then passing it an object with my controls and then passing an array of the of all of the other things I need to pass. Again, it's your default value, your synchronous validators, and a third array element would be my async validators. All right, so in the HTML then, when I create my form, I bind it to that property in my code. Now that Angular is not creating that data structure and automatically hooking it up to the form element, I need to tell Angular to hook that form element up to my defined form group. And I do that with the form group directive. And edit form again was the name of my form here at the top there. Right there. Okay, and now I no longer need to pass it into the save movie because my code already has it. So I don't need to use a template reference variable and pass it in. Okay, then what I can do is I can subscribe to changes on my form. So here I am taking my edit form.valueChanges.subscribe. So that means every single time the user types anything, I'm getting notified and I can then perform the validation. Okay, because it's not going to know to display error messages now anymore. All right, so let's actually look at the code for this. So if you pull down this code and look at it, I actually have two movie edit. I have one called movie edit component and the other one called movie edit reactive component. So I've done this same form in two places. In this case, we're going to look at the component first. So here I'm importing form builder, form group, form control, validators, all from Angular forms. And I'm also importing my numbers validator. That's the same validator that we saw earlier. But again, I can just use the validator directly. I don't need to use the directive. So here's my edit form variable. It's of type form group. And here is an internal data structure that I created called form error. And this is keeping track of the error messages that I want to display for each of these fields. So this is my implementation of how I'm handling my error messages. You could do it differently. So I have an entry for each of my form controls, and initially I have no errors on any of them. This second structure here called validation messages is the set of messages themselves. So these are all the possible validation messages. These are the currently active validation messages, which ones the users are seeing. Is that making sense? You guys are really awake this morning, so I assume. So that way I can easily, you know, I have these hard-coded in, but you can envision that you could be getting these from a database somewhere, that these could be modified per the user's language choice, so that this is much more flexible than having them hard-coded in your HTML. All right, then I have this same ng on init that's looking for the parameter and getting the correct movie. So this code is the same. My onMovie retrieved, the first part of it is basically the same, where I'm assigning my internal data structure, putting the correct title on. But what's different here then is I need to create all of my form model. I have it in here twice. This one's commented out. This is without the form builder. This is the version with the form builder. So notice here that I'm passing an array of validators because I have multiple validators here. This last thing I'm doing then is what you saw on the slide. I am watching for value changes. So every time the user types a character or deletes a character or modifies anything, I am getting notified and I'm running some code. Here's another alternative of something that I could do with value changes. I can add a debounce time. If you're not familiar with that, what that allows you to do is kind of set a timer. Every time the user hits a key, a timer starts, and if they don't hit another key within, in this case, a half a second, then it will recognize the value changes. So this allows the user to type and then not validate till they stop typing. Because when you think about it, it's really irritating to type a character in an email address field and have it immediately say, invalid email. It's like, well, yeah, I know it's an invalid email. I've only typed the first character. So by using a debounce time, you're going to wait basically until the user stops typing for some amount of time before you're going to display those validation messages. So this is some other benefits because you can do this so easily with template-driven forms. With reactive forms. All right, so this is my onValueChanged method. And what this is doing is it's basically going through each field in my form error, and it's checking to see if it's dirty and valid, not valid. I could also have or touched on here. So I only have to have that logic in one place, and I could actually take this bit of code and put it into a service and reuse it for every one of my forms so that I don't have to depend on all the different teams to do it the same. I could have one set of code that all of our teams could use to ensure that all of the validation is handled similarly throughout all the different applications at the company. And if it does have an error, it's going through and setting the correct validation message into that field. And then the save movie then has to be a little different here. And the reason for that is our movie structure no longer has the correct data, right? We're not doing any two-way binding. So our movie structure that we have in our code right now is the original values. They weren't updated with what the user has. the value property, remember I said that the NG form had a value property? So that value property gives us the value of all of the input elements. But guess what? They only give us the value of the input elements that we're displaying on the form. Do we usually display an ID on the form? So if we just went to save the data from the form, we would lose any of our fields that we weren't displaying on the form. So what I'm doing in this code right here on the save is I'm using object assign. I'm taking my original movie, I'm overwriting any new values from my edit form's value property to get the modified value. And this, again, is keeping the original movie from ever being changed, immutable value. And so that's what I'm saving, is that modified version. Okay? All right, so a quick look at the HTML. We'll see that every one of our, first let's look at the form. So here is just like on the slide, we're just assigning the form group to my form. But notice that our HTML now is significantly shorter. This is the HTML for one of my controls. Plus there's no logic in here. It simply turns it red if there's an error in that form error property that I created. Same thing here. It's just checking for whether the title has an error, and if so, it's displaying the error. So all of that checking for dirty and all of that is in one place in my code instead of in every one of my input elements. All right. So with reactive forms, our component is the source of truth. It's usually recommended that you use the form builder to dramatically simplify the code for those. You're not using NG model for two-way binding anymore, so you need to watch for value changes. It's much more flexible because you can do anything that you can do in code, but then again, there's significantly more code. And with that, I want to thank you all very much. Thank you.